Да что вы творите? Отпустите его, сволочи!
I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 13th, 2026. We can't begin a conversation about Canada, which is how we're going to start today, without a nod to the war that we are unconditionally supporting. Spending some of the highest amounts of money per capita supporting the endless slaughter of Ukrainians. I talked yesterday about the recent exchange of bodies and how 1,000 Ukrainian bodies were returned to Ukraine and only 34 Russian bodies, even accounting for the fact that the relentless advance of the Russian forces continues unabated. This is what Canada is funding with an ever-diminishing dollar. And for those of you who are just listening, the opening clip was another Ukrainian man, a young man, being dragged out of his home against his will and kicked by the so-called recruiters and sent off to the front to die, like thousands of Ukrainian men every single day. They're kidnapped off the streets in vans with blacked out windows, and thugs grab them, snatch and grab operations, give them a few weeks training, and then send them to the front to die. I'm not trying to undercut their bravery, but they're forced into it in a war that's been lost for years. And this is what Canada is funding to the tune of $30-odd billion so far. On screen is an article about the Canadian dollar. Canadian dollar is being dumped from foreign currency, foreign reserves, at a record pace. What's going on? Loonie's share of global FX reserve cut more than any other major currency. The world is losing faith in the Canadian dollar, and they don't want to hold it. From the article, coffer, or the currency composition of official foreign exchange reserves, is quarterly IMF data that tracks the global holdings of major currencies. The big ones are, of course, the US dollar and the euro, which account for 3/4 of total FX reserves in the world. However, in recent years, the greenback share has been declining, and in 2025, it touched new lows as the world is preparing for the inevitable change to a multipolar order. We've talked about this lots over the last year. Now the Canadian dollar appears to be suffering the same fate. In the final quarter of 2025, no identified currency saw its share of global FX reserve pool trimmed more than the Canadian dollar, not even the US dollar. Now, US treasuries are being dumped. The greenback is, it's not even the greenback. It's the Federal Reserve note. I hate calling it the greenback because it's actually a factually inaccurate statement. Greenback denotes a certain type of currency that hasn't existed in a long time, but I digress. The fact of the matter is people are losing trust in the US dollar, but they're also losing trust in the Canadian dollar, and they're losing trust in the Canadian dollar faster. Now, why is that? Because Canada is a client state. We're a dependent state. We gave up our sovereignty decades ago, and all these people who are clamoring and upset about the fact that Donald Trump has talked about turning us into the 51st state had nothing to say for decades. While liberal and conservative governments gutted us, sold out our manufacturing base, sold off our resources, and allowed foreign nations not just to dominate our industries, not just to dominate our government, but to dominate the very framework of Canada itself, buying politicians with abandon, and then those same politicians, when they get caught, cover up the report that identified them. That's how corrupt this country is. We're a haven for triads and cartels. We've talked about it on this channel. But the reason you wouldn't trust our dollar as reserve holding is because our star is forever tied to other nations. And I would argue we are tied to the United States, and it's not a quick fix. If we want to stand on our own again, it's not as simple as buying guns or turning the civil service into a paramilitary arm, largely to turn it on our own people. It won't be to fight a war. It's going to take much more work than that. We have to build pipelines. We have to develop energy. We have to reshore manufacturing. We got to get serious about being a nation. But we're run by post-nationalists everywhere. Even so-called conservatives in the eastern part of this country have totally signed on to the globalist agenda. And now that the world is changing and becoming multipolar, everybody can see that we're either going to be tied to the United States at the hip, which we already are, and it makes way more sense because of location and proximity, or we're going to be tied at the hip to the Chinese, which will likely lead to us turning into another Ukraine in 5 or 10 years, because even as the United States gets itself involved and stuck in a war in the Middle East, we're still going to be living beside them. And no matter how bad things go for them in the Middle East, it might actually increase the consequences for Canada as they look north to secure their future. I've always said that Fortress North America was the only game in town. And some people have misidentified what it is that I am saying by that. I'm just going to pull up a screenshot. I'm going to respond to some comments. real quick here. Squishy for breakfast says, Iran isn't an invisible fortress. They are suffering heavy in this battle and might lose the future if they continue with their posturing. They're suffering losses of concrete and largely empty structures. They haven't suffered serious losses in terms of things that are irreplaceable just yet, but that's a separate issue. Fortress North America would end up being the same, not invincible and not separated from the world of affairs. Fortress North America would never be separated from the world of affairs. It would just not be involved in foreign wars. It would still trade. It would still attend meetings. It would still look for multilateralism and bilateralism. It just wouldn't be involved in empire building anymore as we focus on getting rich and prosperous right here at home. Wouldn't that be wonderful? If the 440 million inhabitants of North America just focused on rebuilding their infrastructure, rebuilding bridges, rebuilding roads, rebuilding railroads, creating a beacon of hope to the world, controlling our borders, becoming more efficient while still trading and engaging. That's the idea. It's not pure isolationism. It's just not empire building or attempts to retain the empire. I've made the case on this channel many times, very analytically, that there is no hope of maintaining the U.S. unipolar moment. It stopped existing a long time ago. Reorganization is inevitable, should be embraced peaceably. What I worry about most, it's not that I'm anti-Trump or I suffer from TDS. The Iran war creates friction, which makes that process harder to do in an orderly fashion. Things are spiraling. The United States is not in control. That is demonstrable. They're ad-hocking this thing because they thought they could literally just martyr the leader and a few leaders and the Iranian regime would just magically fall apart. It's all out of order. We've talked about it before. I want to finish with these comments, though. Sometimes you need to get your hands dirty to prevent something worse later, talking about getting involved in Iran. The worse later part is already baked in. It's been baked in for 10 years. The American empire had to be reorganized. Trying to hang on to it is just going to be a disaster for everybody who lives here. Even though in this case it's evil versus evil, Israel and Iran have the same spirit running through them, in my opinion. Indeed, Israel gets a pass. They have nuclear weapons. They get a pass. They're massacring people in Lebanon. They absolutely, crushingly, in an absolutely inhumane way. You can't even argue it. This is what they did in Gaza. They ran out of room in the cemeteries, and so they had to start mass burying people. They leveled people's homes. There's nothing about this that is proportional. There's nothing about this that is precise. It is what it is, folks. And they're doing the same thing in Lebanon as we speak. America won't be allowed out because they simply can't get out. The best oil and gas come out of the Gulf, and they need it too. It's unfortunate, but resource wars will continue. The Gulf was open. Everything was fine. The Iranians were willing to give up their nuclear weapons program before the war began. It's not about that. It's about Israel trying to dominate the region and their money, their hundreds of millions of dollars that they poured into Donald Trump's campaign. They want a return on investment, and they're not satisfied with Donald Trump just walking away. That's why they're involved now. The best option is off the table, which was avoiding this. The second best option is America climbing down from its ultimatums, realizing it made a mistake, accepting the L before we get much closer to the midterms. I see Donald Trump out there, and he's talking about oil tankers lining up to get that American crude oil. But then you do the math. You look at production. You look at how American refineries are tooled. They still have to import oil from outside to service those refineries. They don't exactly have a surplus to sell to the world. That's why the pleb American, I'm a pleb too, it's not an insult, pleb Americans are lining up at the gas stations to buy and pay more expensive prices for oil because it's priced globally. So while the oil companies are making money and the American government is getting some revenue, revenue which, by the way, does nothing to plug the budget deficit. It disappears into the black hole of $88 billion in interest payments every single month. It will not fix that. Neither will tariffs on their own. It disappears into that black hole. So oil makes money. Government makes a little bit of money. But the American taxpayer, the American consumer, is the one that's going to pay for all of those profits, as well as other nations. So while it's good news for the rich and for the developers, it is not good news for the American public, and it's not good news for the Republican Party going into November, and that's what it's all about, folks. I'm warning you. I'm a messenger. I'm not rooting for any sides. People, I saw a comment that I am rooting. Have you ever seen anybody root for the end of America like this guy? Is that what you really think I'm doing? Do you really think I'm rooting for the end of the inevitable partner for my own nation? A nation that I look at as a beacon for my future, a nation whose strength I need a strong America in order to save the people of Canada. I don't think I can save the country. I don't think I can save the government. There's nothing here worth saving. Westminster system sucks. People are disenfranchised. We're going to see an article eventually. Forget eventually. We'll do it now. I've already responded to that comment enough. Taxpayers group applauds Polyev for supporting recall legislation. Support is growing for giving Canadians the power to remove elected officials between elections, says Conservative leader Pierre Polyev, endorsing recall legislation and taxpayer advocates urging Ottawa to follow through. This is awesome. But where was this? Where was this during the election? Where was this before the election? Conservative poll numbers are in the tank. I don't have to like it for it to be true. People have already lost faith. The Liberal Party is eating their lunch. The Conservatives are criticizing the Liberals for tightening immigration and kicking people out of the country, something a lot of Canadians want. They've ate the lunch on bail reform. They ate the lunch on the carbon tax. They kicked out Trudeau and they took away that talking point. So we had a talking point election campaign, which was lost, and now support's in the toilet. This is good. Don't get me wrong, but I fear it's a little too late. There's the country itself. Recall legislation is just the start. You should have an elected Senate. You should have an elected head of state. You don't. The head of state is the governor general, not the prime minister. You don't elect either of those people. They're appointed. You elect people who are designed to rubber stamp them into place. So at any rate, it's not about saving Canada, the structure. It's about the best outcome that can happen for the people. In particular, the Western provinces and even Quebec that has the vision to maybe get out of this deal or put enough pressure on the deal by threatening to leave that real and genuine reform starts taking place. It's a long conversation. We don't have a lot of time. We haven't been a serious nation for decades. We don't build energy infrastructure. We don't build things. These are problems that can't be solved quickly. We need 5-10 years in the best case scenario. What we need is the influence of a very wisely led United States, and I fear that they are burying those prospects on the rocks in the Zagros Mountains. CRA spends $202,000 on survey confirming taxpayers dislike filing taxes. Probably could have saved that money. Yes or no, the question Ontario's chief firearms officer refuses to answer. Other provinces use legislation to shield firearms owners from federal confiscation. We covered on this channel, you don't have property rights in Canada. You don't really own your house. You don't really own your firearms. You don't own your plastic straws. You don't own anything because there's no property rights in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which can be suspended at any time of the government's choosing. And if the government suspends those rights and is found wrongly by the courts to have suspended those rights in a way that was not judicious, nothing happens. The Charter, our most fundamental document, can be suspended unjustly. And nothing will happen. The government faces no consequences, but you don't even have fake property rights. And so other provinces have created a mechanism. First off, Saskatchewan and Alberta have both indicated to the police that there will be no resources for the gun confiscation. They're not going to go door to door. They're not going to kick in your door and try and steal your guns. It is the lowest priority. There is no priority for doing it. Second of all, Saskatchewan created a facility that if you want to comply with the gun ban, as it's adjudicated by the courts, because the CCFR is still going to go to the Supreme Court to fight this thing, they've created facilities where you can turn in your guns and the province will hold them in trust and not turn them over to the federal government. They'll hold them in their own storage facility until there's clarity or until you get actual just compensation for your firearms. And so the idea is that you can either choose to comply and protect yourself fully legally, but if you don't choose to comply, the RCMP is not coming for you, not in these provinces. But Ontario has signaled support, and yet they haven't developed a mechanism. They haven't deployed a mechanism. And this is where Doug Ford's milquetoast liberal ways come marching in. He worked against Pierre Polyev in the last election. He glad hands with Mark Carney. He gives them hugs. They stand shoulder to shoulder. And now they're throwing in a little dose of fake opposition, probably because they smell blood in the water. And Doug Ford wants Pierre Polyev's job. When he jumped ship from Ontario, which would be the biggest mistake, would be a huge setback, even worse than what the Conservatives have done to themselves so far. Anyway, that's Canada in a nutshell right now. Oh, let's do this. Alberta government faces another legal fight to keep supervised consumption sites open. Now, Alberta has one of the most conservative governments in the country. We've talked about how there's certain wishy-washy things and how the sovereignist movement in Alberta might face opposition in the form of the premier. We've talked about how the questionable federalism of both Daniel Smith and Scott Moe, why they're loyal to this government, why they think Mark Carney's a partner, how there was the memorandum of understanding on pipelines, and how it won't lead to anything. It's just nothing but a fantasy pipeline with all kinds of carbon nonsense built in. So the oil that goes through it, if it was ever built, it won't ever be built. It's a fantasy pipeline. But if fantasy oil ever got in the pipeline, it would be so expensive it would be outcompeted on the global market. Although the war may change that picture, at least for a while. They're trying to close supervised consumption sites where people can do hard drugs and in no fear of consequence in open plain sight. And they want to close them, and they should close them, because enabling addiction does not solve the problem. If you want to fix an alcoholic, you don't hand him a beer. You don't hand him a drink and say it's okay. You want to get somebody off meth. You want to get them off heroin. You want to get them off the bad stuff. You don't do that by handing them a supply and giving them a safe place to use. So they're trying to close it. But all these progressives, these nonsense leftist activists, hyper-feminized, which is a whole other issue. It's not a criticism of femininity. My 14th wedding anniversary is coming up tomorrow. I love my wife. She takes great care of me. She's very feminine. She's also very independent. She was educated at a very liberal university. She stands on her own. She does a great job with my kids. She actually went out to Value Village, and she got me some blazers that didn't really fit. And if you saw the back of this, she took the seam out, and she added a piece of fabric. So like I look like a clown from the back, but the camera only sees what it sees. Because I needed some jackets. The jacket I always wear, it's fallen apart. It was my dad's. The thing's got to be like 40 years old. So when I put my hand in it, I have to feel my way through the holes in the liner. It's getting pretty rough. And I'd like to keep it. But anyway, femininity is amazing. True, genuine femininity is amazing. But we've taken daddy out of the matrix. We've taken the patriarchal influence out of the mix of society. And so instead of laying down the law and telling the kids, which is the citizens, the drug addicts who are robbing people and harming themselves and harming everybody else, telling them enough's enough, you're going to stop. And if you don't stop, we're going to make you stop. We want to give them safe consumption sites. We want to give them immunity from the law. And so the Alberta government is trying to solve that and facing opposition every step of the way because this infection, this progressivism, this leftism, has taken over the mind of Canada in a way that is just incredible. Ontario Education Minister announcing school system changes on Monday. They're arguing about budgets in Ontario. One of the reasons I left this province is how woke everything is. You go to a public school and they got rainbow transgender flags flying everywhere at a K to grade 6 school. The kids are being programmed into this gender unicorn nonsense. Doug Ford was elected to stop it. The curriculum that's being taught in that regard in Ontario schools was written by a convicted child PDF, and it is still the curriculum today. One of his core campaign promises, my early break with the Fords after they ghosted me. I used to have Doug Ford's phone number. I used to see him at rallies. He'd say, hi, Frank. Soon as he became PC leader, that all ended real quick. Purged me from social media. One of the earliest signs that things had gone awry is that that curriculum never got fixed and was kept. They're arguing about budgets. Ontario has way worse problems. So suffice it to say, just to put a bow on things, I recognize the problems with Canada. Those problems largely emerge from a very strong left and a very weak right. And rooting against the United States is not my objective. I am not trying to root against anybody. I am trying to advocate for a strong United States that is united around a North American concept because that benefits me the most. My government certainly isn't coming to my rescue. So now we move to what's happening down there and the worrying signs that I see, the warning that I'm trying to sound exclusive. U.S. intelligence indicates China is preparing weapons shipments to Iran amid fragile ceasefire, sources say. Why wouldn't Russia and China get more directly involved? The United States and Europe are fighting Russia in the Ukrainian theater, which we talked about earlier, what we're actually funding there. Proxy war seems to be the norm. It's been waged around the world. Iran has successfully resisted through two episodes of warfare now, through two chapters, and it looks like we're going to start the third one. I fully expect China to start sending them weapons and start defending them more aggressively. Hopefully they don't get directly involved. With this blockade that's happening in the Strait of Hormuz, what happens when the Americans try to interdict against not just a Chinese ship, but an Indian ship? The last time the United States, and this is very recent, put a blockade on the island of Cuba, said no oil is coming in, starved the island out, made problems way worse. The Russians were sending tankers. They turned around and they left, and then they turned around again and they went back. They sailed right through the American blockade. This was right around the same time the United States lifted sanctions on Russian oil. They're making big bank. It's helping them in their war effort in Ukraine. Cross purposes all over the place because of the mistake of the Iranian war. Taiwan opposition leader calls for reconciliation after meeting Xi. KMT leader Cheng Li Wun stressed shared cultural heritage and suggested she would slow down Taiwan's military buildup. Eventually, I think reunification is inevitable. Now, whether Taiwan has its own set of rules, kind of like Hong Kong, where things are a little bit different, eventually Hong Kong was just reabsorbed. The same will happen to Taiwan one way or another. I don't think the Chinese want the military conflict, but I think they're willing to do it. It would certainly be a hell of an announcement on the world stage. And every single day, American military power is dedicated to the Iranian theater. Inventories get thinner. American strength gets weaker. And the opportunity gets riper by the day for the Chinese to maybe move in and do something. Exclusive. Trump promises mass pardons to staff before leaving office. I've been sitting on this one for a couple days. In a recent meeting, the president said he would pardon those within 200 feet of the Oval Office, say people familiar with the remarks. So if you have to put out that kind of olive branch to your own people, it seems to indicate that you know you're doing something wrong and it may be necessary to use the power of the pen to protect people, to get them to come along with you. I'm not saying this because I hate the administration. I'm saying this to highlight the factual problems and fractures and frictions and headwinds ahead of the midterm elections. Change is in the air. And the endorsement of Trump, at least in Hungary's case, seemed to be the kiss of death that sealed Orban's fate. He sent Vance over there to try and shore things up. Viktor Orban concedes defeat in Hungarian election. Early results show Peter Magyar's opposition party dominating the election. Orban's defeat marks an end to 16 years in office. Magyar is campaigning on better renewed relationships with Europe. It's not necessarily that he is anti-Russian. It's that the Hungarian people are sick of the friction and sick of the tension. They may pay a price for that. They may get a taste. Actually, no. I was going to say they may get a taste of the mass immigration and the problems that Europe has unleashed on itself through those programs. But with remigration centers on the horizon, with the Europeans having figured it out, Orban may have saved Hungary from the worst of the damage, and they may have a change of government at a time when all the worst may have passed them by. Hungary could be a beacon in Europe. Another beacon in Europe right now is Spain. They're upsetting the geopolitical chessboard. The headline on screen, Spain to reopen embassy in Tehran in support of ceasefire. The Spanish people are sick of it. They want nothing to do, and the same as the government, they want nothing to do with Israel and the United States and their military campaign in Iran. They're creating, and this is at the time when there's maximal tension in Europe as regards this very crisis right now. Trump said other countries would help blockade Iran. So far, there are a few takers. The British aren't in, French aren't in, the Germans aren't in. Spain is very vocal in its opposition. Magyar taking out Orban doesn't necessarily mean that we're going back to the old way of doing business within Europe. I think we're seeing the emergence of a more independently minded Europe where the power centers in Brussels and Berlin gravitate towards the outer edges. There's big change happening in Europe. And the question is always, who is going to benefit from that? Is it going to be the Russians? Is it going to be the Americans? All of this is up in the air. Europe started committing an act of self-deletion when they decided to go to war with Russia, their best, cheapest energy supplier. They destroyed their own industry and industrial base. And there are nations that are very pro-Europe who are sick of the European Union, sick of the migration. The thing you need to understand is that even though Europe is growing tired of mass Muslim, Islamic immigration, immigration from Africa, it doesn't mean they are pro-Israeli or pro-America in the Middle East. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. You can oppose both at the same time, and quite reasonably so. We have to talk about this. It's absolutely going to make it into the thumbnail. Trump posted, and I think deleted, because I went through his Truth Social before I started filming this. I couldn't find it anymore. I found this at 3 or 4 in the morning last night. I was up super late looking into lighting because I realized I need new lighting in the studio. So I did a bunch of research and ordered some LEDs to replace my 7-year-old fluorescence. Might have an easier time with my green screen when I do that, but I digress. I just happened to see this pop up in my feed, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This can't be real. But it's real. He posted a meme comparing himself to Jesus. It's insane. His base. I mean, I try to watch content. I watch one of the places I watch. I watch Midas Reports, or what is it? Midas Touch. They do news. They're very Democrat skewed. I watch them. There's a lot of things they say that I disagree with, but I watch them so that I understand what they're saying. And there's things that I agree with as well that come out of their mouths. Another thing that I watch is what religious commentary is having to say. There's a lot of Christians, in particular Catholics, as Trump is going to war with the Pope, who are a little bit fed up with all of it. Then he does this. Now, he does this on Orthodox Easter Sunday, which was yesterday. And then on Western Easter, I'm not really sure what the proper terminology is, Roman Easter, Trump was praising Allah. I made a meme and I posted it on my Twitter account where I copied in the words. I mean, he's openly making a joke of one of his strongest bases. The last temptation of Trump. He mocks Jesus, damns Pope, fierce backlash, is White House on drugs. Drudge has definitely changed over the years. They definitely have a more anti-Trump bias. Doesn't mean they're wrong. Like, it's wild. And it's such a cell phone that he deleted it as of this morning, at least as far as I could tell. I went through his Truth Social. I couldn't find it. This from RT. Trump casts himself as Jesus after attacking the Pope. The U.S. president portrayed himself as a holy healer, while some noted a similarity between the man being healed and Jeffrey Epstein. I don't know if I would go that far, but this is what the world is saying. Heading into a midterm year with a famine, you're going to have higher food prices. That's almost a certainty at this stage come fall when the midterms land. But for you, you'll pay more for food, or you won't be buying as many expensive items. But for other people in the world, they're just going to die as a result of this war. That's already baked in. That's going to be laid at the Trump administration's feet. And I want to talk about this. Navy abandons USS Boise overhaul after 11 years and $800 million spent. So there's been a budget request for American defense of $1.5 trillion. $800 million is pretty close to a billion. There is so much waste built into that budget. And I could break that down and we could talk about that. We could do a couple dedicated videos on just the bloat that is built into the American military. Expensive planes, expensive ships, a military that's largely designed for a war that was fought 60 years ago. That's why you're seeing in the current budget, it's something like a 260 or 270x increase in spending on drone warfare, because the United States is behind. They used to have the most advanced ballistic missiles on the planet. That's why in Canada, the Canadians that are watching this will be familiar with the Avro Arrow. We built the best fighter in the world in this country. One of the shames, it's a tragedy whenever I start contemplating it, because we were way ahead of the game. And we destroyed it and we phased it out because the Americans said, we're going to ballistic missiles. We don't need planes anymore. We don't need bombers anymore because we have intercontinental ICBMs that will deliver our nuclear payloads if it comes to that. Why would we need planes? Why would we need escorts for bombers? They're just an additional layer. And so we got rid of it. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy of Canadian aviation. But that was then and this is now. We're living in a world of hypersonics. We're living in the world of supercharged undersea torpedoes. And the Iranians claim to have them. These are torpedoes that there are no countermeasures. That's why the American Navy will not fully enter the strait and try to claim it. That's why they have to take very seriously the threats. The Iranians are saying, like, Trump has made a lot of copy about sinking 100-plus ships. Old ships, traditional ships, destroyers and surface vessels and mine layers. But the Iranians have all these drone speed boats with very fast attack missile capabilities that they're still sitting on, and Trump actually admitted it today in a Truth Social post, that they still exist. That Navy, that cheap Navy, that fast Navy, that limited Navy is far more powerful than a traditional Navy. And this is a very unpopular idea. But you need to understand that American naval power, the aircraft carriers, the missile cruisers and destroyers with their thin inventories of munitions, they only sail the seas because of the cooperation of the Chinese and the Russians, who both possess countermeasures for sinking those ships, which the Americans can't stop. They can't stop those hypersonic missiles. They can't stop them from doing damage. American power, the preponderance of it, the majority of American kinetic conventional power exists and is allowed to exist via the courtesy of their peer competitors who are disinclined to engage in war directly with the United States because it would be bad for their internal economies, but it would also very likely lead to a nuclear exchange. So America's sailing around the world under Trump right now, still acting like a bully, just like they have for decades. And they only get to do that because of the restraint of their adversaries. What happens when the restraint ends? What happens when the Chinese and the Russians more fully arm the Iranians? What happens if the Russians decide to transfer some Arashniks, or the Chinese start to really send in some of the most advanced shoulder-mounted anti-aircraft systems that they have? They have some of the most advanced in the world. Other nations are developing military and military technology specifically designed to counter the American Navy. And they've been doing it for a long time. And the United States, with all of its money, is playing catch-up now with what you see on screen. The point is, $800 million was spent on something that failed. So those big numbers that everybody likes to talk about, that $1.5 trillion, how much of it's waste? How much of it's bloat? How much of it is spent on very expensive assets in a world where successful countermeasures exist at fractions of the price? This isn't news. We've seen the same thing happen in Afghanistan. Very cheap Mujahideen were able to really foil American efforts, and they left without winning the war. The Taliban is still in control of Afghanistan. That is a failure. And the Iranian regime is still in control now, and you have to take the fact that the Afghanis were able to beat American might and all the money that was spent there. The Iranians are a much more complex society, much more technologically advanced, much more literate, much better organized, a functional, whether you like it or not, a functional Islamic Republic that is capable of maintaining itself, building weapons and systems that are designed to successfully counter American kinetic might from the air. They have the ability to escalate. So does the United States. In the end, they have nuclear weapons. But it will destroy the global economy. And if that gets taken out, then Trump and the Republicans lose the election in November. And that's it, man. That's the end of America First. That's the end of MAGA. And it's probably the dawn of a great big new socialist endeavor at the worst possible time, when the petrodollar is under threat. So you can have tankers lining up to buy American oil, which they don't have enough of, which just drives up the prices for American consumers. You can have them lining up all day. It doesn't change the fact that that the United States still depends on the world. It doesn't change the fact that the United States is built upon the petrodollar being the global reserve currency. Every single ballistic missile that successfully strikes a target, or every single drone that hits a target in the Gulf Cooperation countries, undermines the petrodollar. Every single barrel of oil that is paid for or settled in Bitcoin or yuan undermines the petrodollar. Now, we're at the point of crisis right now. If this all goes away tomorrow morning and peace breaks out and there's a deal, America does the right thing and recognizes that it's not in a position to issue ultimatums, recognizes that it shouldn't have gotten involved in this in the first place, and somehow can magically repair enough of the damage to make sure that there's electoral success come November. If all of those things happen in the wake of this, there's going to be a brand new push to reorder the world, and some of those Gulf Cooperation countries may very well break away and move towards the BRICS. It's hard to predict the precise changes that are going to be underway and that will come out of this conflict, but I can certainly predict that there will be a much faster move towards escaping the petrodollar system. And so, if people aren't buying treasuries, if people aren't holding U.S. dollars, or they're holding less and less of them over the course of time, if the whole global economy comes down at the same time, concurrent to the rise of socialism in the United States, do you understand what a disaster that would be? A much bigger disaster than Frank Vaughn trying to warn you about it. I'll see you in the next one.